Open up the February 14th Central Sanitation, or Central Marin Sanitation Agency meeting. Please join me in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Mary, can we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Coro?
Here.
Dupar?
Here.
Guasco?
Here.
Hartzell?
Here.
Pillar?
Present.
Johnson?
Here.
Meigs? Lappert? Phillips? Levine? Hilmer? Sullivan?
Okay, we have a forum. I'll open it up for public participation. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on an item that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Next up is the consent calendar. Do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I'd like to pull a couple items.
What would you like to discuss?
I would like to pull item number 4A and 4G.
What is 4A?
The minutes.
Do you have changes?
Corrections, yes.
Okay. Are they written down?
I made notes in the margins of my copy.
Okay.
Very simple.
All right. Let's give Mary those changes.
On page 3 of the minutes, the very last sentence before the North Bay Watershed section starts, it says the board concurred. The board did not have a vote on that item, and no consensus was formally done, and I definitely did not concur. So I believe that is an inaccurate sentence.
Can you go back and check the minutes on that?
We could say the board majority concurred.
Board majority.
As we've done in the past, if all six didn't concur, we said the majority concurred.
Okay.
And on page 4, there was actually no reporting out at the end of the open session. This text here, it says the board reported that they had met in closed session and this happened and they reported out this. That there was no reporting out at the end of the closed session.
Jason?
That was reported out because I recited it in front of the board and took the notes and you guys had comments exactly what to say.
Yeah. This was not said in the open session. And I don't know if we do not return on the recording devices after the closed session. I don't know if that's a
we don't do that after the closed session, no.
Yeah, because that would actually prove, because I made notes on this and referred back to my notes. We actually, Chair Dupar actually talked momentarily about voting in the public session, and then he said he wasn't sure what he was supposed to say, and he asked Council Govey for direction, and then nothing ended up getting stated as a reportable actions. It just didn't happen, and I was taking notes and made a note of it at the time.
That's not true.
This is right from my notes that I corrected while we walked through it in open session.
I didn't have the exact language, but Jack instructed me to, you know, indicate that we approved a settlement agreement with Lost Valley.
Oh, we did not.
There was a.
This did not happen in open session. The notes that I took of the meeting.
We didn't approve any settlement agreement. Everyone in this room knows that.
Say that again.
I said we didn't approve any settlement agreement. We agreed to take it back to our board and talk to council. It's my understanding that has completely changed since I last my portion of the agreement. And if they want to call that an agreement, that's us taking back what you were requesting to our board, to our council.
Okay, we approved a proposed settlement agreement.
We did not approve it, and you all know it.
We approved a proposed settlement agreement.
That is not
true. And directed staff.
That's just plain false.
We directed staff to.
Okay, so what I would recommend is that we turn the recording devices on back at when we come out of closed session because it would have shown that I was correct in this. I mean, I take notes. My notes are very clear on what happened. That's all the comments I have on the minutes.
Okay, and what other item did you want to talk about?
Item number 4G.
Do we want to clarify with Council Govey what was said in open
Council
session?
Council Govey, we have a miscommunication on the open session item.
It's in the minutes page.
In the minutes.
Page 4 of the minutes. those are the notes that I took in open session, and we kind of wordsmithed those with the board to get them correct. And Commissioner Johnson said that there was no reporting out in the open session.
Well, and Commissioner Bosco says that they did not agree to the settlement.
The proposed settlement agreement.
Proposed settlement.
No way. We agreed to take it to our board.
We agreed to take it back to council, and we also agreed to have our board err on it after council gave us more information on it.
And that was
there would be no way.
And that was not a vote. That was
approve that without
discussion.
Our council's input. No way.
Okay. So what's the controversy?
The way the minutes are written.
Unfortunately, they did not turn the tape back on when we came back out to open session.
Jack, let me summarize. They Ross Valley believes that there was no approved settlement agreement, that it was more of a proposed settlement agreement. That's what came out of open session. We had a settlement directed by you that was proposed.
What I recall is that this board approved the settlement agreement to be sent to Ross Valley for Ross Valley's consideration and hopeful approval. That's all this board could do.
What I'm saying is that we went back to open session, there was no statement made of reportable actions in the closed session.
Well, I think my recollection.
I made notes on that.
Right, my recollection when we went out to open session was that at first we weren't going to say anything, and I reminded the chair that we needed to say something about it. That was my specific recollection.
Yep.
These were my notes, and I sent these to you when you edited these notes to make sure that they're accurate.
Yeah, I didn't even remember editing these notes, but I do remember what occurred following our closed session. Because everybody was starting to leave, and I stopped that from happening.
We'll show a statement as item number one that the board approved a proposed settlement agreement.
It's not true.
There was a 4-2 vote.
That's not true.
We approved a proposed settlement agreement in closed session. We directed staff to send that agreement and a cover letter to RVSD's attorney and board members. That's true. And to report of RVs and RVSD's action to ratify or bring up the proposed agreement at their February 14th meeting. I believe everything else is fine. I think it was just a proposed agreement. It was agreed here by this board in closed session. And we asked you, as staff, to direct it to Ross Valley.
Yes.
Can you get any point of clarification? Did you just say that it was proposed to send to the Ross Valley legal?
No.
Board.
I said we approved a proposed settlement agreement with Ross Valley.
Well, we didn't agree to the proposed settlement agreement.
Well, we don't care if you...
I know
this
that.
This board approved a proposed settlement agreement. That is very clear what happened in closed session. Very, very clear.
There was no vote.
Yes, there was.
There was a 4-2 vote.
It was a different 4-2 vote than normal. Okay.
We directed staff to send that over to Ross Valley and to send it to each board member. So please just put in there, Mary, after an item number one, approved a proposed settlement agreement. Okay. Next, Commissioner Johnson, you have other items?
Yes, 4G. I asked that the prior version of the agreement be sent to me, and when I left the house, I still hadn't received it yet.
What time did you leave your house?
4:20.
I sent it to Commissioner Johnson, probably right before I went to the gym at 4:30, and I copied you on that.
Yes, I did receive it.
So I haven't been able to read that and see what the changes are, and I don't think it's appropriate to put something like this into the consent calendar, and also I strongly object that the CMSA and SD2 staff decided to postpone the revision process until the lawsuit was concluded. I thought that was overstepping of the staff's authority. You know, the board should have decided to defer that if they thought that was appropriate. It shouldn't have been a staff-level decision. That's a different issue. But
I think it only made sense to wait until that lawsuit was over before you negotiate. Because I remember talking to the Ross Valley, not the Ross Valley attorney, but the Sanitation District Number 2 attorney, and he indicated to me that they weren't going to agree to anything until they found out how all the pieces fell from the lawsuit. And that was going to be if I'm speaking clearly about this, that was going to be the basis of how they were going to move forward with a new agreement.
Well, if the,
so
the
I
board
may have misled,
should have been involved in that.
Pardon me?
The board should have been apprised of that and decided proactively to defer the contract revision until after the lawsuit if that was what was recommended by staff.
It was reported to the board verbally when we were contemplating revising it. That's a staff level decision. You know, to start revising agreements, and then we bring back revisions to the board for consideration or for comment or any feedback. Staff has done that historically. We briefed the board that we're starting. You know, we may include it in the agency's work plan. That's this calendar year, that particular agreement, the revision is in the agency's fiscal year 12 work plan and in my personal work plan. We discussed that at our July 2011 board meeting when we reviewed the work plan, that we are going to pick this agreement back up once the lawsuit was settled or there was some court decision on it. And as you know, that happened in November. So SD2 staff and our staff agreed that we would reinitiate that revisioning process.
Commissioner Johnson, any other questions on 4G?
Well, I believe we should defer this until next month so we all can have an opportunity to read the prior version of the contract so we can see the differences between the two and see in detail what the exact changes are, particularly because it's for, it could, you know, I don't know if there's changes that are beneficial to SAN 2 or not in this. I have no idea. I can't tell from this. It's just standalone verbiage that makes no sense out of context without seeing the prior contract
typically,
as part of the packet.
Typically what we do at the agency historically is that when we make these revisions, then we bring back the revised contract as routine business to the board, and we highlight the significant revisions in the contract from, you know, a staff and also from a legal counsel perspective. That's what we do is in practice, and that's what we've identified in the staff report for item 4G. And there are some, you know, it's important to have a revised agreement because a lot of the terms and conditions in the current agreement aren't very accurate. They don't reflect, you know, the current scope of work, what services we're performing for SAN District Number 2. You know, the entities aren't identified properly in terms of the representatives, and there's some benefits to the agency in terms of some of the exemptions that we've included with Council Govey's advice and counsel in terms of indemnification, and we cited those also in the staff report. So things where we would have been fully responsible for in the past, now there's exemptions there, particularly for if there's an issue at a pump station or a force main that's not related to our direct work under the scope of services, then we're not held liable for it. In the old contract, it was not defined, so there could be different interpretations. So it's a much more specific and sound contract from staff and legal perspective. As I know in the staff report that Council Govey has approved it to form, he was involved in the reviewing of the contractual aspects, not necessarily the scope of work, and some of the exhibits, and it's been approved, reviewed and approved by the Court of Madera Town Council at their last Tuesday night meeting.
One of my major focuses in reviewing it was to avoid any potential CMSA liability as we were hit last time. That was one of the focuses I wanted to address so that we weren't exposed. And we addressed that as clearly as possible or as much as we could in the negotiations with SD2.
Okay. I'd like to point out that when there was a contract between CMSA and Ross Valley for the lease agreement, it was every version was pounded out in detail at meetings of this for months. and to put this in the consent calendar.
That is not relevant.
Well, it's a contract between CMSA and one of the member agencies. It's a parallel. And number two, on page 5, there's a clause in the middle of the paragraph B. The district agrees to hold CMSA free and harmless and to indemnify CMSA and its officers. It really should include there, if you're talking about protecting, it should include the member agencies at best. I don't know what the prior version said, but the member individual member agencies should be held harmless and indemnified also. There's only protection for CMSA. There's not protection for San Rafael or for Russ Valley.
That provision is not in the current agreement or hasn't been in any of the agreements since 1985.
That begs the question. What Commissioner Johnson is addressing is that should all the other member agencies be included in here? I don't think it's necessary because I think CMSA and SAN number 2 are the contracting parties. And I don't see if CMSA is the joint powers agency that's comprised of the members, then I don't really see the necessity to include them. Could it have been there? Yes, it could have been there. I don't see any necessity for it, though.
I feel it's a necessity, speaking on behalf of Ross Valley. You're representing CMSA, and I can understand your point of view, but speaking in terms of Ross Valley, and I would think San Rafael would agree with me that there should be some indemnification for the other individual member agencies in this respect. Thank you.
Please don't speak for San Rafael.
Okay. Any other questions on the consent calendar? Do I have a motion to approve?
I have a motion. Barbara, I seconded.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Does anybody from the public wish to discuss an item on the consent calendar? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
I don't consent.
I don't consent either.
Isn't it just a yay or nay? Next up is item number 5.
I request, Chair Kupar, that we move item 5 to after item 8, please.
No.
Thank you.
Item number 5, interim wastewater service agreement for San Quentin State Prison. Jason?
Yeah, thank you, Chair DePauw. So the agency received a letter from Deputy Director Deborah Heisen with the Facility Planning, Construction, and Maintenance Division within the California Department of Corrections last Wednesday, and the letter requests CMSA negotiate a one-year interim wastewater service agreement with Department of Corrections. And as stated in Ms. Heisen's letter, that they've evaluated conceptual level proposals that were provided by CMSA. They've compared costs with what they're currently paying under their agreement with their current service provider. And they've also, you know, evaluated costs and compared with other prisons throughout the state that have outside agencies that provide wastewater services. And that Department of Corrections has concluded that it's in their and the state of California's best interest to contract directly with CMSA for wastewater services. And the plan would be that we would develop an agreement with Corrections, and that once that agreement was prepared, that they would terminate their current agreement with Ross Valley Sanitary District, and that CMSA would begin performing the services. And then over the next year, there would be different tasks that we would work with Department of Corrections in completing. One would be a condition assessment of the main San Quentin pump station, the equipment and assets on both sides of that station. There's a wet well and there's an equipment room, or what's called a dry well. Based on that condition assessment, we would develop a long-term capital plan. We work with Corrections to determine the funding method for that capital plan. We would determine the appropriate way to determine the wastewater strength at that prison and look at other details of terms and provisions that we couldn't have the time right now to fully develop for an interim wastewater service agreement.
Okay.
It's kind of a two-step process. So we've met with Corrections several times. They've toured the agency. We've met with them out at the pump station. We've taken a look at the assets out there. And essentially, you know, what the scope of work would be is that CMSA would maintain the pump station, and we would continue to treat the wastewater and biosolids, which we've been doing for since 1985 when CMSA began operations. Now, we did receive this letter from Lost Valley's attorney today. This was emailed to me by Ms. Jolie Houston at about 11:30. I did provide this to Chair Dupar. I briefly looked at this, and essentially what Ms. Houston is saying is that CMSA does not have the authority to provide these services to the Department of Corrections, and she cites two sections in the JPA. Here's the probably the JPA with the highlighted sections, sections 3 and section 5. Section 3 pertains to the original purpose of CMSA back in 1979 when the JPA was drafted, and then the first section of the powers section of the JPA. And Ms. Houston is saying that because of language in those two sections, and there's references to boundaries of the members, that CMSA can't provide those services. And then her second main point is that that two of the pipelines are owned by Ross Valley Sanitary District, and she cites the 45-inch Ross Valley Interceptor from the junction where the San Quentin pipe connects to that interceptor to CMSA, and then the 16-inch Ross Valley Force Main from the San Quentin Main Pump Station to that junction structure. Now, in review of the JPA, after I received this letter, you know, the 45-inch interceptor from underneath Highway 101, where the Corte Madera Force Main ties in, all the way to CMSA is a jointly owned pipeline. It's not solely owned, as indicated in this letter, so it's owned by multiple agencies. And the JPA does say that that 16-inch San Quentin Force Main is owned by Ross Valley Sanitary District. However, Department of Corrections believes they own that pipeline because they paid for that pipeline back during the Clean Water Grant days in the early 1980s. And I've seen documents from corrections, well, schedules from corrections, showing where the state of California paid for the pump station or their local share and paid for that pipeline. So from corrections' perspective, they own that. And regardless of what the JPA says, they're not part of the JPA, so the JPA doesn't apply to them. So that's, you know, my analysis. Regarding, you know, the sections of the JPA, you know, the purpose section, really, it's just a purpose statement that's been revised over the years by the board, setting the purpose of the agency specifically over the last couple strategic business planning processes. And the power section, you know, refers to something different. It does not reference anything pertaining to CMSA providing any level of services for any agencies outside the service area. There's nothing in the Section 5 powers that prohibits CMSA from providing any services to any other agencies. And as you know, we've talked about this several times in the past. That's why CMSA has, in 1993, entered into a service agreement with Los Galenas Valley Sanitary District outside the service area to provide pollution prevention services. That's why we recently entered into a contract with Tamil Pious Community Services District to provide fog-related services outside the service area. Mutual aid agreement, you know, agreement with agencies outside the service area. You know, cooperative safety director agreement with agencies outside the service area. You know, a countywide public education program, an award-winning program, in agreement with agencies outside the service area. So we visited this many times. We've received legal opinions, and if my recollection of, you know, county council's legal opinion and also outside legal opinion, the last time this was discussed pertaining to our food energy initiative, is that if it's not specifically prohibited in the JPA, then the agency is governed by the Sanitary District Act, and we can provide wastewater-related services, such as the ones that we're already providing to other agencies, pursuant to the Sanitary District Act. So that's my brief, you know, analysis of the letter. But staff's recommendation is to authorize staff to work with Department of Corrections to prepare the interim wastewater services agreement. And then at some point in the future, 30, 60, 90 days, we would bring that agreement back to the board for consideration.
Do you foresee this agreement being longer in length than just a one-year time frame?
Well, the one that we'd bring back in the near future would be just 12-month, but it would likely have a provision that it could be, you know, it could be month-to-month after that. Or we'd include that, or we include some language that if it was agreeable to both parties, it could be administratively extended, or it could be extended by amendment. We'll work on some language like that with Council Govey. But ultimately, it would be a long-term agreement. But it's good for the board to keep in mind that the most of the work in a potential future agreement is going to be the wastewater, biosolids, treatment and disposal, what we've been doing already. The only new aspect is operating the pump station at the request of corrections. As you know, that the warden, well, the retired warden at St. Quentin, he was also very interested in, you know, pursuing, you know, an agreement with CMSA.
Okay.
And last thing to point out is that if CMSA were to enter into agreement with corrections, short-term or long-term, that would be additional revenue to the agency, which would then keep our rates down to the member agencies incrementally. So it is a benefit to the member agencies and our mutual customers by CMSA directly contracting with corrections.
Okay, any other questions from Commissioner Johnson?
You stated that if it wasn't specifically in the JPA, then the Sanitary District Act would prevail. But it is specifically mentioned in the JPA, where it's restricted to within its boundaries, not in one place, but in two places. And obviously, we have a disagreement about who owns what sections of our pipes. And you can say it's not true, but that doesn't necessarily make it so.
I'm sure that the
Department of Corrections.
Yeah, the Department of Corrections attorneys have looked into this.
My understanding is that they've looked into it. And they've had, you know, multiple lengthy discussions with Ross Valley's attorneys, in particular.
Is that an opportunity for the public to?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other commissioner wish to comment on this item?
I have one comment. A similar issue was presented to our office a couple years ago. Very similar issue on whether CMSA had the ability to contract, and we opined that they could. And an objection was raised by a few board members, and the board agreed to send it to outside counsel. We sent that issue to outside counsel with the instruction to independently and objectively analyze the issue. And the outside counsel came back and opined that the agency could very well have the authority to do that. Now, this particular letter, I'm not sure when it was emailed, but it was emailed sometime today. And I worked today all the way up until 6:45, and that came over here. So I haven't had a chance to look at it. My understanding in terms of the objections there, in terms of what's happening tonight, is that you would be authorizing Jason to go move staff to move forward to develop an agreement to come back to you.
That's correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any harm or any foul of calendaring this next month for me to report back. And if the board desires, we can send that same issue to outside counsel to ensure that this issue is properly vetted.
Okay.
Based on the concerns, and I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Just want to let the public speak.
It was directly responsive to what he just said.
You can say it right after. I'll open it up to the public now. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak? Please give your name.
I'm Thomas Morrell. I'm one of the lawyers for Ross Valley, and I've been assisting with this matter. And I participated in drafting the letter today. Ms. Houston has another commitment tonight, so I agreed to appear tonight. And, you know, I originally scheduled this on my calendar to discuss the settlement proposal, and in my last discussion with Mr. Govey, I said that I would attend, and so that was the initial purpose of me putting this on my calendar and appearing, is the settlement to be discussed later in the evening. I think I will address the individual matters of concern to Ross Valley, and it's a little bit discouraging that, you know, on a night when I intended to appear here to assist in documenting a settlement, that what's being proposed as the first substantive matter of discussion is instead, you know, an opportunity for new litigation, new rounds of settlement discussions, you know, the injunctive relief being sought by the member agency. And a district that has to deal with a joint powers authority that ignores the specific limitations on its purpose, ignores the specific limitations on its powers, ignores the express limitation on what property belongs to its constituent members and what property is properly for the agency to use. I mean, almost every single page of the Joint Powers Agreement is being read in a crabbed way to reach that result, with the only real purpose to harm the ratepayers of Ross Valley, including those resident in the city of Larkspur. The idea that this has been vetted in detail by the state is just wrong. It's not clear to me entirely whether this proposal originated with the state or originated, you know, elsewhere, but I'm in regular contact with the state after Ross Valley received the first letter indicating an intention to terminate the existing arrangement, which is, you know, I will grant you it is an old document that no longer closely corresponds to current facts, but that document as well as the joint powers agreement that created CMSA makes it very, very clear that all of that transportation infrastructure belongs to Ross Valley. And as of Friday afternoon, I was having discussions with their council about that. Let me tell you, they are eagerly interested in that question, and although perhaps their business personnel are looking for every opportunity to reduce the cost, and I understand that, the typical budget cycle for both the state and local agencies, you know, it's very easy to say that you can provide a service more inexpensively when you seek to do it by offering up the property that belongs to another party. You know, it might appear a compelling bargain at first reference, but, you know, I've reviewed the historic documentation, and I understand that the state put a lot of money into the original construction of CMSA plant at the time that the Joint Powers Authority was created, and that is reflected in the documents, that's reflected in the construction documents and the invoices, but the critical concern of the state at that time was that they not be a member and that they not be obligated to pay any costs associated with the initiation of CMSA other than a fixed amount. And the party that was to take the risk that the cost would be in excess of what the state had budgeted and the fixed amount, that was Sanitary District Number 1. And that's why on every single page of the current annexation agreement between Sanitary District Number 1 and the state of California, it indicates an intention that that district would own and operate all of the off-site infrastructure, and the on-site infrastructure would retain the responsibility of the state. In fact, that's the reason that that agreement has to provide for the district to maintain the pump station and the other infrastructure at the prison, because otherwise that would all be the prison's responsibility. Because like most of property owners, the property owner is responsible for their on-site infrastructure, and the district owns and operates all of the off-site infrastructure. And that is woven through that document in every respect. So it's no surprise when you put that document down and you turn to the joint powers agreement that it specifically identifies that that line is owned by Ross Valley and that no other member and CMSA cannot use it without Ross Valley's consent. I mean, that's the only conclusion that can be drawn.
We're not here tonight to discuss who owns that piece of piece of pipe. We're here to discuss granting Department of Corrections a maintenance agreement. Well, and you're saying that they don't have the right to void that contract or to void any agreement.
And that's not what I've told them. I mean, I've said that those issues are a little more complicated, but after a reasonable period of time, there is no expiration date listed in that contract, that they presumably have the right after a reasonable period of time to deliver some sort of a termination agreement. In fact, we indicated in our letter to them that 18 months was, and that's not a technical, I didn't draw that on anything, but, you know, presumably were we to approach the state and tell them that the Ross Valley intended to discontinue service and detach them from the CMSA facilities, that they would not think 18 months to be a suitable period of time for the district to terminate that relationship. So, you know, the converse being, there is some period of time which if they wanted to go their own way, they could, but that doesn't mean that, you know, to ignore everything in the existing agreement between Ross Valley and the state that indicates that the state does not own that pipe, including all of the easements that were granted at that time to the District Number 1. I mean, there is nothing in that agreement anywhere other than the fact that they paid a lot of money specifically for the right to annex to Ross Valley, not to own a pipe and operate it and choose another service provider someday in the future. It was to annex to Ross Valley, and that they would pay a fee in consideration of that annexation.
Okay, so, I'm going to get some clarification. Because we're not in a dialogue. I'm going to get some clarification on your comments.
I think that what Mr. Morrell is saying is that Ross Valley may have an issue with the state of California on that issue, and I urge them to pursue it vigorously if they feel there's an issue. That particular issue that he raised is not an issue with CMSA. The stuff about the joint powers agreements, we vetted that. And I'm happy, again, at the board's request, the chair's request, or the board's request, to look at it again when I've had time to digest it. I don't know if it's quite fair to send me an agreement or send me a 3, 4, 5, I don't even know how many pages it is, but a long letter objecting to what we've been on the agenda and what we discussed previously on the day of the meeting is fair to the agency. But since we do have time to, since we're not approving an agreement today, we do have time to digest that letter and to come back next month.
And I think before this agency even signs an agreement, we'll have to know, you know, all the ramifications and legalities of that pipe.
Correct.
Okay, are you done, Ms. Morrell?
Yes, thank you.
Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. You've already spoken, so is there somebody else? Okay, Commissioner Johnson?
Yes, I did want to point out that when we did seek outside counsel opinion on that issue, the outside counsel was only provided with a couple of very cursory documents. They were not provided with substantial documentation on how the Joint Powers Authority, on all the paperwork necessary for them to actually make a correct legal opinion. And I raised that issue at the time, and I'm raising it again now, because the documentation provided to them was not sufficient for them to be able to make a fair assessment.
Any other comments?
None. I would just like to point out that it would be probably appropriate for the law firm to also include a correspondence to me as a member of the Board of Commissioners of the Sanitation District, and I was excluded from...
You are copied in the CCs. If you look at the last page.
John.
No, John.
Jason. Al. Barbara.
I'm sorry. If you look at the last page, you were copied
on page 3.
I'm looking at page 2. There's no page 3.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The board.
No.
Okay, whatever you say.
You got
there we are. Oh, well, it would be good to use my proper address, but anyway.
So, Jack, oh, are you still having fun?
Nah, it's
okay. Jack, how do we get this thing going here? I'd like to have you look at this letter. Send it to outside counsel. Have them look at it in relation to, you know, our JPA provisions to the Sanitary District Act of 1923 and get another opinion
any
on whether or not we can provide a service agreement to someone within our jurisdiction.
There was a reference that we may have been remiss in sending documents, so I want to make sure that I include any and all documents to be sent to outside counsel.
So Commissioner Johnson, what documents would you like sent to this outside counsel? Since you've raised that question before.
Oh, this was like a year and a half ago.
Well,
as I recall, there was only two documents.
No, not that. Then. Now.
I know. I would have to get a recommendation from legal counsel. I do know that, as I recall, that I remember specifically that the Larkspur Annexation Agreement was not originally included in that packet, and some other core documents. But I would have to defer to our counsel for a recommendation. I'm not going to render a legal opinion.
If anybody wants me to send out any other documents, just notify me, and I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. So tonight, the item before us, or before the commission, is whether we want to have staff prepare and develop an interim wastewater service agreement for St. Quentin. We've received the letter from the attorney. We're going to have Jack send that to outside counsel for review, along with the items that they have raised, our purpose statement and our JPA's agreement. So I'm going to open it up For a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move publicly approve the revised sanitary district number 2 pump station enforcement operation and maintenance agreement.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong page. I was reading this off the interstate. I got so distracted with the comment about the concern for Larkspur when in number 8 it says it's Larkspur's irrelevant to the dispute. Pardon me. Let me go back. I move the staff recommendation with respect to consider the California Department of Corrections request to develop an interim wastewater service agreement for San Quentin State Prison.
I'll second.
And to give Jack direction to send out.
Yes. I'll second.
All right. And other comments? Call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. Next up is item number 6, the greenhouse gas emission study agreement with CH2MHMK. Jason?
Yeah, thanks, Chair Dupar. So in June of last year, we presented the status of many of the agency's initiatives and projects and programs and other activities. And we also presented a list of proposed activities for fiscal year 12. And those activities were, construction projects in progress, projects in the design phase, other initiatives that agency was moving forward, some things we didn't complete that we're proposing for the next year. And we're looking for some feedback from the board. And we also asked the board if they would like to include any other initiatives for a consideration for fiscal year number 12 for the agency. And there were a few good ideas for initiatives to include. One was from Commissioner Guasco, and that was for the agency to perform or conduct a carbon footprint, also known as a greenhouse gas audit or greenhouse gas inventory, study. So the following month in July, the board reviewed the detailed fiscal year 12 work plan for the agency. I included those new projects, including the greenhouse gas audit, and the board adopted that into the agency's work plan. At the same time, our agency's strategic planning committee was developing the strategic actions to support the goals and objectives within our second five-year business plan, and we included the greenhouse gas emission study in the strategic business plan under the goal I note here in the staff report, where we talk about CMSA incorporating green business principles into our long and short-term planning. So this particular study is in two agency planning documents, the work plan for the year and also the strategic business plan. So looking to initiate the study, I contacted my colleagues over at East Bay Mud, who have a lot of experience in greenhouse gas audits and various other types of progressive types of studies and programs. And they suggested a couple different firms that they were familiar with, had good experience. One was CH Twom Hill, so I contacted them. And they gave me a reference of all the different agencies that they've done these similar studies for. They've also noted that they're actively involved in the Bay Area Clean Water Agency's AIR Committee. And they're also the project director for the California Wastewater Climate Change Group. And that CH Twom Hill, as a corporation, a global company, they've also developed a lot of the standard greenhouse gas reporting protocols that are standardly used now throughout the nation and the world. So I request a proposal from CH for the mission study, kind of talking a little bit about what we are looking for. And they gave me a proposal. The schedule looked good. It was about $19,000 cost, which looked reasonable for the scope of work. And we prepared a scope, various exhibits, schedule, fee proposal, bundled it with the agency's standard professional service agreement, and that's what's attached to the staff report tonight. So the fee is about $19,860 that if it's approved by the board, we would likely have the study completed sometime in April. We'd give a presentation to the board either at the April, May, or the latest, the June board meeting, and it would be a good education for staff and the board to learn a lot about the current greenhouse gas emissions requirements, reporting requirements, the recent cap and trade regulations that went into effect January this year. In terms of the results of the study, it'll essentially be a baseline greenhouse gas emissions for the agency and carbon dioxide equivalents for calendar year 2011. So it'd be a baseline, and they'd look at mobile equipment, stationary equipment, emissions from CMSA's various unit processes, biosolids hauling, and determine this this emissions amount, probably in metric tons. Good information to have. It would be beneficial in the future for the agency in terms of as we initiate other types of projects and initiatives where there's a potential greenhouse gas reduction, we can compare it to the baseline, and we could actually sell those greenhouse gas offsets to agencies that or organizations or industries within the current cap and trade regulations and have an additional revenue source. I don't know a lot about this, but an example is the Richmond refineries will probably be regulated. Well, either they are regulated or they will be regulated under cap and trade. They're going to have some emissions limits now and into the future. I believe it's like 2020 they have some, you know, targets they have to meet under the CARB requirements. So CMSA, say for instance, we start showing greenhouse gas reductions due to our collection of commercial food waste and fog for our new facility that's going to be operational likely this fall. We can show the greenhouse gas reductions compared to our baseline. We can maybe approach that Richmond facility and say we have, you know, so many thousand metric tons of offsets, and there's a market value for those, and they could buy those, and maybe they could use that to achieve their limits within their cap. So that's kind of how it could be used, you know, and be beneficial to the agency and our customers as additional revenue source. So anyway, so the agreements here, the scope of work, thank you, Commissioner Guasco, for recommending this. I think it's good information with the agency. And I'll try to answer any questions, but I'm not very knowledgeable on all the regulations associated with, you know, air permitting and reporting and so forth under AB 32. But if it's approved, I'll learn a lot over the next, you know, few months.
Commissioner Guasco, do you
have any questions? So we went out and asked for a professional services agreement with CH2M Hill. So we've done work with them in the past, right? Here.
Yeah, it's the last two projects they worked on. One was they did the design work for our cogeneration engine replacement project back in 2004. And they were the peer reviewer for the wet weather improvement program's final design.
Right, rather than peer review.
Yeah, so those are the two things that they've, since I've been paying attention to the agency.
Now, Jason, I forget the details of our professional services contract agreements. What's the ceiling on those before you have to, do we have a ceiling on how much we can let out on under professional services?
It's a sole source.
Oh, yeah. Well, the agency can, we have a management signature authority policy in our financial policies, and it's referenced to the first tier limit in the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act. Mm-hmm. And right now, I believe it's about $30,000.
Okay. I remember I've heard the number before.
But I thought it was appropriate since this was a board requested initiative, just like the regional charge study that was requested by the board, that I bring the agreement back to the board to review it and get board buy in before staff just approving it.
Okay. I appreciate the information. I was hoping to see something similar to an RFP so I could look at a few different proposals. So I wasn't quite ready to see the professional services agreement on this. But I appreciate the information and following up on my suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments?
I have a couple questions. But could I just ask Commissioner Guasco, when you asked that question, were you thinking of sole source, or were you thinking, oh, I thought that's what you why you you were.
No, I deal with professional services agreements and sole sources and sources.
So it had to do with Jason bringing it back to us as opposed to the.
Yeah, I didn't know how he was going to present it, so I see it as a professional services agreement because I just assumed that we had a good relationship with a trusted company, and that's why it was. And then that's why it was brought to this board. And then also, you know, I know East Bay Mud had some suggestions regarding this company, but I was hoping to see if there was maybe a mix of proposals.
Okay.
Generally, what we do in terms of RFP, we have some internal administrative procedures governing how we deliver projects, how we hire consultants, how we procure equipment that provides guidance to staff, and those have been, you know, all reviewed by our construction attorney, Bill McInerney, so they're in compliance with the KUPCA, which I mentioned, and also the public contract code. And generally, what we'll do is, if we know the scope of a project pretty well, and it has a certain, you know, value to it, we will develop an RFP, we'll send it out to firms. We know all the engineering firms in the region and what their expertise is, and we know the people that are the project managers. And we'll send it out, we'll go through an internal process where we'll evaluate them, and then we'll bring a recommendation to the board. And we'll describe that we went through the process. But on small initiatives like this, that it'll take a lot of staff effort to do the research to understand what the scope of work is, because we're not experts in greenhouse gas emissions. And then on the consultant side, it takes them a lot of work and time and effort to prepare proposals. You know, we look at, you know, the amount of staff time to do that and the effort involved. Sometimes it makes sense maybe to just go with a trusted firm that has a lot of experience and they have great references that we check some of them. So, you know, we go either approach. But if it was something like an $80,000 design agreement, we would probably send a, you know, an RFP to several firms.
So you already had an idea of approximately the cost after your discussions with East Bay Mud? And
generally, but it was, we needed to see it in the proposal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple of questions. With regard to the product, this isn't, I've had to do this with the city of Larkspur, but that's not to say I'm versed in all the terminology. Couldn't pass a heavy duty quiz on it at this point. But there's no place that I saw where it actually said that a product would be recommendations for improvement or recommendations. Where sometimes when you do an energy audit, for example, there are some fixes. Like, oh, if you did this, you wouldn't have that use. Or you do a water audit. Mm-hmm. If you do this, you'll not be wasting as much water. I would think that with respect to the, you know, I mean, a recommendation might be that in terms of the fleet, you do such and such or whatever. And I may be missing something in the text of the and the recitals here and so forth, but I found it to be more statements of conditions than anything having to do with an analysis of what that means in terms of the mission of the agency and how it could or could not make changes that would affect those conditions.
Yeah, I understand that it's a great comment. The scope of work for this was just to do the evaluation and come and develop the baseline 2012 figures. There is a little reference here on page A3 of Exhibit A of the scope of work. That says, they're going to do a sidewalk of CMSA. So they're going to look around at the agency, and they'll have some, you know, wastewater, you know, experienced people here. So they'll see, you know, different.
So it'll be a team that comes out on that one day visit.
Well, I don't know how big a team it will be, but you'll probably have the technical expert and maybe somebody else.
Well, it better be for $4,900.
But while they're doing the, you know, review and sitewalk of CMSA, if they see anything that they think there's a potential for some different, you know, operation or optimization, they'll note that, and then in the summary technical memorandum on task 4, page A3, they'll note that in the tech memo. So they'll note some of these things, and then if we want to pursue, you know, as an amendment to this contract, them, you know, doing some additional analysis and looking at, you know, what's the potential for this reduction, what's the probability of it happening, what's the level of investment at the agency to realize this reduction, that'd be a separate scope of work. But I recommend that this is a pretty good scope for the amount of money, you know, to do the emissions, you know, evaluation, identify some things. And at the presentation, if we'll send you guys, of course, the tech memo, so you can take a look at before the presentation. So you have like questions or whatever, and the presentation. If the board's interested in, you know, maybe pursuing some of these other ideas, that's something that we can talk about and get some direction, and then I could amend, you know, work out an amendment to the agreement, bring that back to the board for consideration.
Commissioner Johnson?
Would I agree with that? With that, it's not. I think it's odd that you find out how big your feet are, but you don't know how to get the recommendation that you need to amputate all your toes or whatever it is you need to do to get your footprint down. So would that be an additional scope of work with additional cost? Because I was already kind of thought the $20,000, while you have said it's a small contract, to me $20,000 is still a lot of money.
Oh, it's a lot of money. You're right, it's a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of rate payer money, a lot of customer money.
Absolutely. So
and
would that be more money to expand the scope of work?
Well, if, you know, for example, they walk around and say they come up with six different potential changes at the agency where they think, based on their professional experience, what they've seen done at other agencies, that they could reduce greenhouse. There's a possibility to reduce greenhouse gases. They would note those, you know, conceptually in their report. We would review those, and then if it was something that we wanted to pursue, either now or sometime in the future, we could do that. But yes, it would be an amendment to do any you know, additional studies or potential, you know, if you really took it to extreme, you know, some design work and, you know, some, you know, construction activities or purchasing new equipment or doing some process optimization work with a different group within CH or a different, you know, consultant altogether.
And you said that there was something that was happening by 2020. What was that again, the 2020 deadline?
You know, I've heard, you know, anecdotally, I don't have all the information. This will probably would come out in this report in some level of detail for our review. But there's, I believe under AB 32, there's some requirements that emissions are reduced to pre-1990 levels by 2020. And that's driving the cap in trade regulations. But I just don't know much about
that. Got it. I remember that now. Okay, so it's not legally mandated now.
Well, the cap and trade went into effect. CMSA is exempt from that at this point in time. But there's many other industries that either have to report or they have limits. We'll learn a little more about that if we want to pursue this type of a study.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I did have one question on page A4 that I neglected to ask. Down at the bottom, it says task assumptions. Services in Task 6 will not be performed unless requested by CMSA in writing. Well, I can't say it. It's like saying X instead of ask. Task 6 is project management. Well, obviously, they're going to perform project management.
That's a
so
typo.
They mean
task.
7A?
Yeah, it's Task 7A.
Okay.
That's correct, yes. Thanks for making sure we correct that if we contract with them. Because they'll have to do the work under Task 6. He's
yeah,
part of the scope.
So. I figured that was pretty critical.
My only comment on this is I wonder if we're getting ahead of ourselves in that, you know, we're going to get this agreement or do this study, and then it's not going to do us much good for a couple of years. And then everything may change under the cap and trade agreement.
So it could be obsolete, but
so, that's number one. Number two is that with the revenue shortfall that this agency is experiencing right now, I'm wondering if we can put this off to either fiscal year 12-13 or fiscal year 13-14, and just push it out where we'll know more about greenhouse gas emissions and what everybody needs to have in their studies at that time. That's just my observations on this. I've seen too many studies come and then sit on a shelf. So with that said, I'm going to open it up to the public. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on this item in the back?
I have a question.
Your name, please?
My name is Donna Bjorn. I'm from San Antonio.
Okay.
Jason, does is a baseline from 2011 mandatory to have in order to have the potential of getting involved in cap and trade? In other words, do you have to have this information to show where you are in order to, in the future, get?
That's a great question, and I've heard that it's important to have the baseline emissions information, but I don't know exactly under cap and trade. If, for instance, we were to start collecting all, you know, that food waste, and we could show that we have so many metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions compared to, you know, it being landfilled, that might be good enough. I just don't know.
Do you have a follow-up?
Well, it just seems like something that you might want to know, because if you wait too long to get 2011, baseline figures, if you wait for 2 or 3 years, it might be difficult to get them, if that's the year you need. Mm-hmm. And that's what I just don't know.
Yeah, I understand. Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay, anybody else have any comments from the public? Okay, seeing that, I'll bring it back to the commission for either a motion or further discussion.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I appreciate Ms. Bjorn's comments. There are good questions. Jason, is there any way you can ask this question of CMH2 Hill? You know what I mean.
I should look at it. Asks this question of CMH2 Hill.
Maybe that's a good question to pose to the contractor or propose the contractor.
Oh, yeah, we could ask that question.
Okay.
Excuse me, through the chair.
Yes.
Also, I was wondering if CASA might be looking at these issues soon, and it certainly would be something appropriate to ask them to research for everyone and to get the all the agencies started on it, because I think it is going to hit us.
Yeah, CASA, you know, the climate, the California Wastewater Climate Change Group, CASA is a member of that.
Right.
So that... And CH2M Hill is a project director, and they provide updates at each CASA conference. Mm-hmm. So the CASA membership does routinely get updates, and there's, you know, discussions amongst the membership regarding the topic. That's a good question. But right now, wastewater agencies don't have to report their emissions unless they have cogeneration engines that exceed, I think, 25,000, you know, metric tons of emissions. We don't exceed that.
Good. No, I'll get
it. Or it's even reduced to 10, between 10 and 25. There's another, you know, target range there where you you may not have to report it. Since we're under all that, I'm not tracking that too closely.
Commissioner Johnson?
It seems kind of odd when you think about it, when they're worried about, say, a wastewater treatment plant's carbon footprint, when the task of a wastewater treatment plant is actually to do something so much more important to the environment as its core mission of treating wastewater and being able to discharge into the bay or wherever your discharge pool is a clean product, you know what I mean, which is on the terms of importance on the world scale, to me that's a much higher mission.
Well, I suppose there's different ways of doing it, so your emissions reflect the type of systems you use or the...
There's ways and there's ways.
Yeah.
Commissioner Blasco?
The reason I mentioned it was we were talking cogen, and we were also talking how to utilize even more of our material to make a more refined ash, basically. And so that's, you know, I believe we were talking emissions issues during there, too, during the presentation from the company that had the revolutionary technology that we were looking at for cogen. And the, was it burning of the cake? Something like that? We did it. We received the presentation.
I delivered, or was it a consultant?
Consultant. I forget their name. And a fairly revolutionary way of dealing with some of the byproducts of digestion.
I gave that presentation.
Okay, then you
did. It's the Biosolids Energy Initiative that CMSA and 16 other agencies are participating in.
And then, of course, the footprint was the concept. I just wanted to know
You know, it seemed like it lent itself to this, or at least would be a byproduct of inquiry later on for clean air issues. So, because I kept hearing how there's virtually nothing left after the work, other than inert ash or whatever it was. But anyway, that's what my thing is. Okay, let's see what our footprint is already before we do this, and see if there's any differences later on, and what we can do to tighten it up. But
so, do you want to make a motion to go forward with this? Do you want to push it off to fiscal year?
Well, I'd like to postpone it for now, actually. So, I'll make a motion to postpone it to 2014. And I appreciate the work staff did to get us to this point.
Thank you.
Okay, I got a motion to postpone to fiscal year 14 or fiscal year 13-14.
13-14.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2014.
Well, fiscal year.
I'm sorry, fiscal
13-14.
Yeah.
13-14, okay.
13-14. 13-14, so.
Yeah.
June 31st, 2013.
Back to us then?
Yes, for further consideration. Mm-hmm. Sorry about
that. Is there anybody else that wants to discuss that? Pushing it out?
I just have a question for Mike.
Sure.
As I read this report, it says that we have a strategic business plan that causes us to want to incorporate green business practices into our short and long-term plan. So by not doing this, what does that do to that objective?
It would shift it to the long-term planning versus short-term. Right now, as a strategic action, it's just, you know, a task to do it. There's not any time frame, you know, established, so it'd be more of a long-term effort. We just plug it into the plan, update, you know, that particular action, stating that we'll take a look at this again in fiscal year 14.
It's only 2 years. It's not
a year and a half. Yeah.
It's not really long-term. Right.
Depends how you define it.
Anything over a year is long-term.
Well, I will second that motion because of a couple of things. One is that we'll know a little bit more about the mandates and where that where other layers of authority are going. There's nothing to preclude you from coming back and asking the board to reconsider it if through CASA or other sources of information, it comes back that we'd be better off getting this baseline done now, sooner rather than later. But also, given that we are, we're looking at some somewhat different financial inputs, and I think that it's probably important to kind of retain a prudent look at things that weren't necessarily in this year's budget already. So that's a second.
Okay.
With my rationale.
Okay, any further discussion? So the motion is to continue this study until fiscal year 13-14. I have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, next
up. I will, Commissioner Guasco, I will contact Stacey Tomb Hill, let him know the news, but before I tell him the news, I'll ask him the question. If
I figured you'd already deal with that.
Yeah. And then what I'll do is I'll either report it out verbally next month or send the board an email with what they tell me about that. Okay?
Okay, thank you. Okay, next up is item number 7, the fiscal year 12 debt service payment options. We're only discussing debt service and not operating costs. I just want to remind the commissioners that. So, Jason, do you have a staff report?
Yeah, we actually have a revised staff report, and that's in front of you. And it's been revised because, so we should look at the staff report in the agenda packet. Because today we were just verifying our coverage ratio calculations within the rate covenant section of the bond master indenture. And while verifying the calculations, we found a data input error. And when we corrected that data input error, the agency's coverage was not 1.33, as stated in this prior staff report in the packet, it's below 1.25. So the agency is technically right now in default under the master indenture due to the underpayments this year by Ross Valley. So because of that, you know, I talked with the bond counsel this morning, reporting to him, you know, the calculation problem. And two of the options that were presented to the board in the staff reports are no longer options. So now the options for the board's consideration I have in this revised staff report, which are essentially the same items that the board discussed at the December board meeting. Sean Tierney, you know, the bond counsel, advised me that the board should make some level of decision tonight, and said it should have been, the decision should have been made in the past, since, you know, from his perspective, that Ross Valley was in default when they didn't make the full payment in the beginning of August. So that's the staff report, and here are the three options for the board's consideration. And just to remind you that option number three is what the board discussed and voted on at the December meeting, with the outcome being the 3-2-1 vote. May I turn over for board discussion?
Okay.
Is there going to be any comment from the public?
Yes, there always will be comment from the public. Jason, I thought we talked about something today regarding this when we talked about the ratio coverage and issuing invoices to the other two member agencies for the shortfall.
That's right. That's option number.
That's option number
two.
Two. Okay, because I didn't think that because right now the we don't have the 1.25 coverage or revenue coverage to waive.
Because the agency,
so
right now, because of the underpayments, we don't have enough revenues to where the agency's coverage ratio doesn't exceed 1.25.
Right. What is it?
It depends on what we consider an operating expense. So we have to work out that detail with the financial advisor. So it's anywhere from 1.6 to about 2.1. Somewhere in that range.
Wait a minute.
Excuse me. I'm thinking of something else. Sorry.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
1.16 to 1.21. Okay. Got my digits wrong there for a second.
Okay. So we're talking about debt service payments. Any comments from the board? Okay, I'll open it up to the public. Anybody from the public wish to comment on this item?
Tom Morell again. And, you know, I'd probably prefer to discuss this in connection with the settlement. I believe they're related. I mean, I'm a little confused by the previous staff report and the current staff report, as I don't understand why, you know, one option is just to treat the members equally and invoice all the members for their share of the debt service payment and regional charges as they are properly calculated by CMSA staff. I mean, I've certainly encouraged at all times Ross Valley to pay its pro rata share in accordance with its best estimates. And I believe, you know, for many, many months, those estimates have been shared by CMSA staff. So, I mean, to send default notices and demand letters and invoices based upon numbers that are drawn from a wonderland that bear no relationship to anything anybody believes, CMSA staff, bond counsel, I mean, anybody who looks at this knows that those numbers are wrong. They were wrong. They were wrong when they were proposed. They will be wrong tomorrow. And the ability for the board to very quickly calculate the actual equivalent dwelling unit counts for each member is a fairly straightforward and simple task, and I would urge the board of commissioners to continue with the process that staff already began in recent days of reaching out to the members to provide their final actual counts. I know Ross Valley will cooperate in providing those. If no matter what the board's action is, I would encourage them to come to their best determination of what those actual equivalent dwelling unit counts are for Ross Valley and for the other members, and to voluntarily pay its share. And I think its goal is, and at all relevant times during this period, to pay its fair share in accordance with the joint powers agreement and the payment agreement under the bond document. So, I mean, I don't want to say that there's no impact to what the board's action is. I think it would be incredibly inequitable to send a default notice to Ross Valley when they've, at this juncture, paid the highest percentage of what, you know, every member who, or interested party who pays close attention, Ross Valley's paid the highest percentage share at this juncture. So to choose that entity and to single them out and to send them a default notice is incredibly unfair, it's inaccurate, and it's just wrong under, you know, any theory. And, you know, I can address it in the settlement agreement, but I want to point out, you know, Ms. Hartzell, leaving you out, it's a little bit different for me to fit the city of Larkspur in. I mean, the citizens of the city of Larkspur as ratepayers and residents within the Ross Valley district generally, they've paid. I mean, Ross Valley ratepayers have paid their fair share percentage. They're not the ones in significant arrears at this point. And so it really stands matters on their head to consider that the only default notice would be sent to that member that actually paid the highest percentage share of the actual EDU charges for the 2011 year. It can only be viewed as an oppression of one member by the other members who are significantly in arrears. And so I don't want to write letters that would be default notices addressed to the city of Larkspur. The city of Larkspur is not in default. Ross Valley is not in default. And this is a simple business matter that should be resolved in short order by calculating the final EDU counts in accordance with the Joint Powers Agreement, sending out invoices, and providing for a manner in which the members can promptly pay their charges in accordance with those documents.
Okay. Are you done? Okay. Jack, can you?
I just want to address one thing. It's the board's decision on what option they're going to pick tonight. But, and I think Mr. Morrell's comments were well-intentioned, but I want to make it clear that neither San Rafael nor San 2 are in arrears. Okay, they were billed and invoiced back in July what the estimated EDU rate, EDU numbers were going to be. They both paid those invoices. So as we sit here today, both San 2 and San Rafael are not in arrears. And I think that's the biggest misnomer. Now, how the shortfall eventually gets made up is a different issue. But as we sit here today, San Rafael and Corte Madera are not in arrears. And that fact is in cement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So anything to the contrary is absolutely misleading and false. And I know some people may not understand the process here, but San Rafael, Ross Valley, and Corte Madera were billed based on CMSA estimates. It's not the member agency's estimates. The payment agreement says CMSA estimates. So CMSA made the estimates based on not Wonderland. They made the estimates based on the fourth quarter of last year's EDU count, which was
actual from fiscal year 11.
So it wasn't Wonderland. We didn't pick it out. It wasn't Fantasyland. It was picked out from the actual EDUs from the fourth quarter. Okay. Yeah. So what happened was we had some indication that there was going to be a reduction from Ross Valley. There was some indication back in March, but there was no study done to actually implement the reduced EDUs till later. So although Centralman had some indication that there was going to be a reduction, that's all they had. So they based the fiscal year 11-12 budget on the fourth quarter EDU numbers. San Rafael and Corte Madera have paid that invoice.
Okay. And,
sure. Okay.
Well, and further, had Ross Valley paid their invoice, they could have requested back a refund based on providing this agency with documentation as to how the lower units came in, correct?
That's correct. We made that offer in the supplemental invoice that was sent to Ross Valley end of August. We said, please pay your full invoices. Mm-hmm. And once you determine your actual EU counts for fiscal year 12, let us know what those are. Provide, you know, the supporting documents, which are just a handful of mm-hmm. things to support it, and we can verify it. And that we would agendize at the next meeting board consideration of providing the refund well before the fourth quarter. That was initially offered by staff at the end of August.
Okay. And there's no singling out of one agency over another. Still open time, please. Anybody else from the public wish to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. Commissioner Bora, do you have a question?
No, I have a question. I have a comment.
Okay.
My comment is I take great offense at talking about Wonderland and so on, when quite frankly, the Wonderland, this whole issue, is how Ross Valley 6 years ago adopted their EDU count. We've asked continuously for proof of what they did. We're told it's not available, it's proprietary, it's baloney. And now they're in the process of changing them. They still haven't certified it to the board. In the meantime, two other agencies now have to pick up the Benny, quite frankly, for them. And they certainly are in default because if San Rafael has to go out to their ratepayers and ask for more money, which they will as a result of this, they have to have a reason. And the reason is that under the obligation we have here, we had to pay it. But we're paying it because they're in default.
Commissioner Johnson?
Okay, since everybody's restating their position, I might as well restate our position again, which is that after we inform CMSA, like we did every year for the past 25 years, whatever the number of years is, of our estimated EDU count, they deliberately made a new finance policy that was in violation of the payment agreement, which very specifically says it's based on estimated EDUs.
Because I'll tell you.
No,
because
no.
We got it from counsel directly stating
but
that the JPA sets the estimates, not the member agencies.
Oh, really?
The JPA set it, and they based it on the prior year's actuals became the current year's estimate forward.
I need to be able to speak just like any other board
you
member.
You can speak, but don't misrepresent
I can have
this
my own
policy
opinion. I can
that's
have my
stated
own opinion.
As such.
I did. This is Ross Valley's side of the argument. Just because you don't agree doesn't mean I don't have the right to state it. And I really
no.
resent you interrupting me.
We can have differences of opinion.
So
but
stop.
The facts
stop
are the
now,
facts.
Please.
He's just taking valuable time away from Tracy.
Yes. So, in retaliation for us having a lower count, which would automatically, the way allocations are done between the member agencies, would therefore increase the other member agencies' fees for the year because that's the nature of math. Within a few weeks, a new policy all of a sudden was made that doesn't agree with the terms of the payment agreement, and the only way to revise the payment agreement is for all participants to agree to it, which Ross Valley did not. So that is the origin of this dispute. All this other stuff is just what happened in 2006. All that other is just bad feelings or whatever. And it really is true that we have paid more of our share for this year than any other agency. I don't believe the finance policy was a legitimate, lawful finance policy. And I personally consider it null and void for those reasons. And I feel that we have always asserted that we would pay our share of the appropriate charges. And we are completely willing to do this. So the first option here where it says the agency will absorb the debt service revenue loss, I assume they're talking about Ross Valley's share. I don't know what portion they're talking about there. But people need to pay their share of what's due at some point in time. That's a mandate of the JPA. You can't just, and the payment agreement, we can't absorb it. It needs to be paid by the people that owe it. And there's no choice on here that just says have all the member agencies pay what they owe, which I'm stunned at. Thank you.
Commissioner, any other commissioner? Commissioner Gawanska.
I'd like to ask Council Morrell some questions.
No.
None? Ask him.
That's engaging with the public.
Could you ask the questions for me? Ask you.
Then. Okay.
You're through the chair.
I would just say one thing. If the board's indulgence is to seek other counsel, that's fine. But it's we do have counsel here, mm-hmm. and if it's the board's indulgence to ask counsel from another agency, a member agency, questions, they can. But it's certainly out of the ordinary.
I think it is.
Shall I ask, or is that a moot point at this point?
I think it's. You're asking your counsel. Are you asking your counsel to provide you guidance?
No, I'm asking questions. I'm not the expert. Everyone else in this room appears to be, so I thought I would ask. I've heard plenty from Council Gobi, and I know there's counsel in the audience, and I'm asking for permission to ask questions of that counsel in the audience.
I don't think it's appropriate. I've never had 12
board years. The board should vote on whether they want to seek additional counsel from another counsel. Otherwise, it is interacting with the public. And Mr. Morrell, for better or worse, is not your attorney.
Correct.
But you did it, and you did it.
Well, I'm your counsel.
We asked him.
He's lead counsel.
We asked Mr. Morelli questions.
Okay.
On his statements.
Okay, then I think I'll ask Council Gobi.
Is that okay? That's appropriate.
Okay. Council Gobi, is there truly a default going on here?
The way the bond counsel, Mr. Cherney, I'm going to explain it to you. I'm not the bond counsel. I don't have expertise in bond matters. But the way that he explains it is that once an agency is billed and invoiced under the whole bond agreement, et cetera, with investors from the outside, and an agency does not pay the invoice, then it is a default. Okay. That's the way he explains it. Now, if I understand that your counsel has talked to him as well, and it's been vetted out with that counsel. Mr. Dow has talked to Mr. Turney. I've talked to Mr. Turney at length about it, and that's his opinion. I don't have an opinion as to whether it's a default or not. So I left it up to him because he's the expert.
So, Council Gobi, if you were to answer this as a yes or no question, is there a default, or is it, I don't know?
Can I ask the chair that the questions be
questions
placed
asked
in...
Asked.
No, but that they be placed in a less condescending manner.
Okay.
Oh.
Because we do have that policy here of decorum.
Okay. Yes, we do. Okay. I apologize if someone...
He has stated that you're in default. He has stated that Ross Valley is in default. Based on discussions with the bond counsel.
The bond counsel has told me since early September when I reported to him, you know, what's transpired since March 10th and, you know, what we had in our budget in terms of, you know, revenues that we were expecting to receive for debt service, which was used to develop the invoices, and when the invoice wasn't paid, he said at that point in time, Ross Valley was in default. That's what he... Okay. Said to me, and he's told me that
Ross Valley's in
a half dozen times.
The answer to your question is yes.
And he said that, you know, up to this point in time, he's realized that we've tried to characterize that potential, well, that default as maybe a misunderstanding of what the requirements were in the payment agreement, things like that.
Okay.
But he said is beyond the misunderstanding or miscommunication aspect now.
Okay, thank you. My interpretation and my understanding of bond default would really apply to the CMSA as a whole, not any individual JPA member. So maybe, and I'm not trying to sound condescending, I think it would be wise to get back to bond counsel, have them render a report that we can see that actually legitimizes and conveys these concepts they're saying to you, because I'm hearing a third party. So I see it as a default by the JPA group, CMSA.
Well, right now,
and I'm pretty sure I'm right.
I mean, you're right. Right now, yeah. CMSA is in default.
RBSD is not cited as a default.
Under the payment agreement, Ross Valley's in default.
That's completely inaccurate, and I think it's misleading.
I understand that. I'm just telling you what the bond
counsel said. Very misleading. For anyone listening in this room, very mistaken.
Jason, on that line, didn't the JPA didn't CMSA make the bond payment in full that was required?
Yes.
The way that it's explained to me is CMSA is in default by virtue of Ross Valley being in default.
Okay. All right. Okay, any other comments from the board? Commissioner Johnson.
If the payment was made by CMSA, why doesn't the math work on the 1.25%? Shouldn't that have worked out then?
If the payment from CMSA to the bondholders?
I think the answer is that the payments by all the member agencies have to exceed 1.25%, or the ratio of 1.25 over what's due.
It's a calculation where you take all your revenues.
No, I don't need to know how you do it. It just doesn't make any sense that if the payment was made, the math doesn't work.
Because we're supposed to have 25% more net revenues than the bond payments, and we don't have that.
But if the payment was made, then we should.
It wasn't taken from revenues. It was taken from another fund to make the shortfall.
We don't have 25% additional revenue where that 25% exceeds the debt service. After you take your expenses from your from your total revenues, you get the net revenues, you compare the net revenues to the debt service payment, and then you divide those, you get a number. The number right now is less than 1.25.
I would like to ask to be provided with a copy of those calculations, please. Thank you.
Commissioner Hartzell. I was wondering if either our attorney, Mr. Chair, or our general manager could once again state the payment agreement facts as we, as a commission, believe is the system that we're unable to operate under, because this is obviously the bone of contention where I understand that our representation from Ross Valley is saying that we've gone astray on the payment agreement. So I'd just like to have that restated, if I could.
I think the payment agreement, Mr. Dowd, correct me if I'm wrong, says that CMSA provides estimates. And what CMSA did this year was they provided estimates based on the fourth quarter actual EDU counts. In previous years, the estimates were based on other data. This year, the estimates were based, it changed, and the estimates were based on the actual EDU counts as they existed on at the fourth quarter.
And the interpretation that led to the commission voting that system in, the interpretation is that that's fully allowable under the joint powers agreement that operates.
It was a change. It was a marked change from what happened before, but it complies with CMSA providing estimates. It doesn't say how CMSA should provide the estimates. That's one rational and reasonable way of doing it. Another rational and reasonable way of doing it would be to provide, to do it based on what the estimates were provided by member agencies. Okay. Somewhere along the line, somebody felt that wasn't reliable, and it changed. But I think a perfectly rational way of doing it is to base it on the actuals that existed on the fourth quarter with a refund. If the actuals, if that estimate changed during the fiscal year.
I have a comment.
Yes.
Well, you know, earlier tonight we heard a few parties indicate that an 18-month notification would be appropriate for various changes in operating procedures having to do with another item on our agenda. And I think that one of the problems that where this all started was the abrupt change in the estimates that were forwarded to this agency without any explanation. And it wasn't, all right, in about a year, this is where our estimates are going to be. It was, this is where this is what we're going to give you as the figures coming right up. And so from a standpoint of planning for our budget at that point and the other agencies that had been operating under the premise that things were just moving along the way they always had been with these figures that were out there and being used with no big news break about why there would be massive changes and reductions, here we were faced with the need to make a decision in order to stabilize budgeting, and you can't do that with kind of like the 5-minute notification or 2-month or whatever. So that's my does that make sense? Is that?
I think that was the feeling.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, just kind of wanted to.
Hey, Commissioner Guasco.
Council Kobe. So, the way it sounds to me is that CMSA is kind of going into an area here that is forcing a default or creating its own default. Because what's really going on is there's 2-member agencies that are going to be underpaying. So it's a forced default. Ross Valley's willing to pay our end. And so if we haven't already, but the bottom line is it seems like a forced default. I don't necessarily buy all this business about the discussions with bond counsel and their impression that the Ross Valley's in default because of the agreement for their EDU counts. Or the members are reporting for the EDU counts as a breach of the agreement of the JPA. When we talk about the breach of the agreement of the JPA, when 3 members or 3-member agencies of this group, this venerable group, decide to change the JPA when they know that all members of that JPA have to have a say in and agree to these changes and actually change it completely contrary to the JPA agreement and then tell us it is now official policy, I have a problem with that.
Well, so I can address
in my opinion, my humble opinion, there's been a lot going on here that flies up in the face of our JPA agreement, and some of these matters probably won't be solved unless we do go to arbitration. At least the truth will come out then, and then, of course, whatever's been going on in these discussions and changes will come out, and then we can... Pardon me?
This is a question for Mr. Coffey.
It's a long question. It's not just a yes or no.
Right. So in terms of whether all agencies are paying their fair share, at the end of the during the fourth quarter, Senator Fowles' actual EDUs from last year were used to base their invoice on. Corte Madera's were also.
I remember.
Okay. They not only paid that invoice, but they provided the documentation for what their actual EDUs were. And that I think what you're intimating is this was a way to somehow do a chokehold on Ross Valley. All that happened was Ross Valley was billed for its actuals in the fourth quarter. Not unreasonable. There was some indication that Ross Valley's were going to be lower. From where... And whether it was actually going to happen, nobody was sure.
Well,
because this was in
default.
This was in April when all this was starting to be vetted. Okay. So they were billed. And they were assured, Ross Valley was assured during the billing process beginning in August and all the way through today, they were assured that you pay the invoice, you get your refund if your actuals differ.
Assured.
And Jason has been requesting from Ross Valley, what are your actuals? Your estimates were 24,810. We know that's not true. We know it's somewhere in the low 25,000s. We know that. And yet you still haven't paid that. So once you pay your fair share, okay, you pay the invoice, you're refunded to what your actuals are. We don't know to date what your actuals are. We don't know. Now, Sarah Fell has reported their actuals and confirmed them with the documentation that Mr. Dow has requested. Corte Madera has done the same thing. The simple solution to this debt service issue
and the simple solution to an arbitration that now is going to probably exceed $150,000 is for Ross Valley to pay the invoice amount and get their refund.
Okay.
Simple.
So that wasn't my question, but thank you.
Okay.
What was your question?
If you have a question, I'll be clear as a bell with the answer.
Right. The forced
default. Because I have six learned people here who hold me
that. The forced default that CMSA is creating.
There's no forced default. All that Ross Valley has to do is pay the invoice. There's no issue anymore.
So I think that
and
is
you know what?
In terms of
this council's opinion, I think that Ross Valley is being so stubborn that it's going to cost the ratepayers $150,000 in arbitration fees, and second, it's going to chokehold their own agency in higher bond costs in the future. And
well,
if they want to do that,
I see that
that's
at
fine.
The CMSA level. That's my opinion of the CMSA activities right now.
It's
not stubborn. It's just plain. It's just plain obvious to me. So, but
do you have a question for Mr. Gobi?
It's increased.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Do you have any more questions?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Do we have a motion? Do we have a recommendation as to which way to proceed on this item?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
That we go with option 3, file notice of default. An invoice San Rafael Sanitary District, what is it, $191,000 that was not in our budget, and SD2, $59,000 that was not in our budget.
I'll
we'll
second
pay
the
that.
Motion.
Okay. The motion is to file notice of default and invoice the other two member agencies for the revenue shortfall.
I second it.
Okay. And it's been seconded. Any further comments? Okay. I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Okay. Next
and the one. Number on that vote is?
4-2.
4-2.
Motion is carried. Do we want to take a 10-minute break?
Yes,
or do we
please.
Want to go right? Okay. We'll reconvene at 10 till.
I started to
take
the